We'll proceed to the second case of the day, the United States versus Baker. Ms. Winslow.
May it please the court, counsel. The district court deprived Malcolm Baker of his constitutional rights to a fair trial and an independent defense by permitting the government to suppress material and relevant evidence in this case. The government now asks this court to affirm that ruling, but to do so would newly endow it with the right to not only charge and prosecute my client, but to prescribe the theory of the defense by hand-selecting what evidence it deems relevant.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm troubled by the motion in limine that was made by the defense, and if this gun was so critical to proving his innocence, why was there an agreement to not admit the evidence relating to the other possible owners? That was your motion in limine.
Your Honor, that was our motion in limine, and it related back directly to the government's refusal to give us this evidence. In fact, we knew that this weapon was used in an unsolved murder, which we maintain is irrelevant to the case against Mr. Baker. The fact that the murder is irrelevant, the fact of prior possession by unknown individuals is directly relevant. Government indicated to us over and over again that it possessed information, data, that it was unwilling to give us, but that we may open the door to without knowing what it was if we were to introduce this evidence. For these reasons, the defense had to make reasoned strategies during trial based on this deficit of information.
And is it your contention that this evidence alone would have been sufficient to change the jury's verdict?
It is, Your Honor. In fact, in this case, the government, in its rebuttal closing argument, asked the jury to reject our case in its entirety because we had not offered evidence to support this theory that another individual could have brought the weapon to the scene. If we had had this information, the very information that the government has now seen fit to disclose to us after the opening briefs were filed on appeal, if we had had that information, we would have had specific facts we could have presented to the jury. First, without any further investigation, we could have presented to the jury that this was a weapon which was transferred among a small group of individuals known to one another in the Bellwood and Maywood area of suburban Chicago, to which my client, Malcolm Baker, had no connections and which we would have called witnesses to support his claim that he didn't visit those areas, in fact, didn't leave his home area in the west side of Chicago. In addition, it's our belief that if we'd had this information, it's not just our belief. In fact, we would have investigated the individuals involved in the prior arrests involving this weapon. We would have attempted to get more information about the crimes involved, and we certainly would have made every effort to go out and investigate and interview these individuals to determine whether or not they could provide us with additional links. It was Mr. Baker's position from the day he was charged in this case to today at present that he never possessed that weapon.
Well, where would all that information get you in the way of a defense? Would you have argued that the police planted this on him, or that
yes,
somebody else was at the scene and planted it on him, or just what would the argument have been?
Your Honor, the arrest took place early in the morning hours of December 6th of 2003. Mr. Baker was on the street alone, essentially, with the police officers. It has been our contention, and we were not uncandid about it at trial in our arguments, that the police brought that weapon to the scene of his arrest, that in fact they were the individuals responsible for bringing it there, and these police reports and other investigations would have given us the link between known possessors of this weapon and the police officers present at the scene.
Of course, none of those reports, though, tied up those weapons in the immediate time vicinity of this violation, right?
Not directly.
None of those, specifically, date-wise, the tracking and the tracing of the gun, there is certainly a gap between when that ends and this incident happens, when they see him running down the street, according to the police, clutching something in the waist, right?
That is true, Your Honor. That is the testimony of the police officers, and there is a time gap. However, absent these reports, Mr. Baker had no information with which he could present any facts to the jury beyond that he was not the original purchaser.
And what exactly is the time gap?
These go from the January until April, and our arrest then occurred in the following December. There is a period of time in which we don't have information. We would have made every effort to fill in that time gap had we had these documents at our disposal. We would have interviewed these individuals. We would have tried to find out where the gun was transferred after it left the hands of Shimon White. And referring specifically to Shimon White, who was the Illinois Department of Corrections officer who was the original purchaser of this weapon, Mr. White was known to us from the original disclosures in this case. We did make immediate efforts to contact Mr. White to ask him to be interviewed by our investigators. He declined, I think not unreasonably, in that he later did face charges. We then tried to subpoena him before trial when the government was finally giving us some of this information that was filling in the blank spaces, and the Marshal Service, for its own reasons, did not serve that subpoena. They said they didn't have enough time, but we certainly subpoenaed this Mr. White after the court finally ruled on the government's motion.
Is there anything in the circumstances of this case that would supply a motive for the police to plant a weapon? My understanding of the original encounter is that it was for open intoxicants. They stopped him for having a beer bottle on a public street. Now, why would that give rise to a motive to plant a gun on him to trump up a gun charge?
Well, Your Honor, this is a case in which the Chicago police directed extra efforts to law enforcement in an area that they consider to be particularly high crime. What we have in this case is the testimony of trainee officers. These are officers who are in their original training period, their probationary period, if you will, and they're seeking to become full officers of the Chicago Police Department. It is our contention, it has always been, that these officers had something to gain by making a gun case. In fact, during our cross-examinations, or during Mr. Rodriguez's cross-examination, the officers admitted that this was a big arrest for them, that, in fact, this was a meaningful and significant arrest, particularly for a trainee officer. Given their motivation to become full officers of the Chicago Police Department and their trainee status, it's clear to me that they did have a particular... There would have been a motivation for them to plant this weapon. Now, if we had been able to create some tie between any one of these officers, and there were three at the scene, although only two testified, if we'd have been able to create a link between these officers and some encounter with this weapon, we surely could have presented to the jury concrete evidence supporting our theory that the weapon was brought to the scene by another individual.
Was there any attempt to identify the fingerprints of the officers?
In fact, there was. Ms. Cushing, Patricia Cushing, who was the expert in the fingerprint expert that testified, did in fact inform us beforehand that she had cross-checked the fingerprints against those of the officers.
Of the arresting officers? Obviously then the fingerprints on the gun were not those of the officers.
They were not those of the officers. They were not those of Mr. Baker. They were not those of any other individual that was identified in this case, which again provides more support for our position that Mr. Baker could have identified a more likely suspect through the course of these investigations. I see that my time is running short. I will reserve the rest of it for rebuttal.
Surely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winslow. Ms. Reuter.
May it please the court, excuse me, defense counsel. There's an abuse of discretion standard in this case, and the question before the court is whether the district court judge abused her discretion when she considered the government's submission in camera and ruled that the materials there were not relevant to any issue that was before her at the trial. The judge exercised her discretion in this case properly, whether we're looking at this under Brady or Rule 16. First of all, to defense counsel's point that the government in this case suppressed evidence or was hiding evidence, the government in this case did not make some unilateral determination that this was not pertinent to the defense. What we did here, out of an abundance of caution, is submit the materials to the district court judge in accordance with procedures that this court has authorized as appropriate. We submitted the materials in camera with notice to the defense and provided the district court with a written record with our arguments and with the materials so that she could evaluate those and make a proper determination. In terms of what that determination was and whether this was evidence that could have been sufficient to change the jury's verdict, it simply was not. The materials that the government submitted dealt with a very limited period of time. January 2003, when Shimon White purchased the gun at Sound Shore Galleries, and April 9th of 2003, when the gun was used in a murder.
Well, if you assume that the officers lied about seeing the gun fall from his waist and that the gun had been lying on the ground, which is the argument that counsel's making, wouldn't information about the past owners of the gun help Baker to explain why the gun was lying there?
It depends, Your Honor. The information in the government's submission would not have. The fact that Shimon White had the gun in January and that it went to a couple of people and was used in a murder in April 9, 2003 does not inform at all how it would have wound up in these arresting officers' hands or on the street in the west side of Chicago 7-8 months later in December of 2003. In fact, the defense theory there really doesn't make sense. I mean, the notion that these officers had some motive to plant a gun, I mean, first of all, it isn't true, but taking the defense argument that it was, it sure would be better for them to make a murder case than it is to chase some guy down and find that he had a weapon. The fact of the matter is this tremendous gap in time between April and December is really what reduces the materiality of the evidence that was in the government's submission and justifies the district court's decision that it wasn't relevant to the issues that were being tried.
When was the murder prosecuted?
The murder has not been prosecuted. As explained in the submission that the government made to the district court, it was an unsolved murder in Maywood, and at the time that the Baker case was headed to trial, that was still an active an open investigation.
And still is at this point?
It's the government's understanding, Your Honor, although this is outside the record, it's the government's understanding that it is currently a closed investigation and that the leads that they were pursuing there did not pan out in the way that they had hoped.
Ms. Ruder, were you trial counsel in this case?
Yes, I was.
Perhaps you could share with us then the government's thinking in submitting this in camera.
Yes, Your Honor. At the time that the case was headed to trial, it was September of 2004, and this Maywood murder investigation was still an open investigation, as was the Shimon White investigation, which I also prosecuted. The government did not have any specific reason to think that there were connections between the defendant, Malcolm Baker, and the individuals who were under investigation in the Shimon White and murder cases. But without knowing what background or relationship there might be, we felt that it could seriously compromise the murder investigation in particular to reveal this information to the defense.
Well, if the government has some unease about whether Mr. Baker might have some contact or connection to other cases you're investigating, why couldn't the flip side of that be that you're concerned that there might be a reason for the defense to have that same possible suspicion?
There was absolutely no information that we had that there was some link. But because of the nature of an ongoing murder investigation, where one of the things that police officers are trying to do is go out and find a suspect and talk to him, and the inherent dangers that could be involved in that process, it seemed unnecessary for us to take that chance on our own. We did have the procedure available to us that this court had approved to submit these materials to the judge because truly we did not think that they needed to be produced under Brady, under Rule 16, under Giglio. They really were so remote. They were not material. They would not have any impact on the outcome of the case. So we engaged in this procedure, Your Honor, out of an abundance of caution so that a proper determination could be made.
Was the statute running on this case?
I beg your pardon?
Was the statute running with regard to the prosecution of Mr. Mr. Baker?
It was not. Mr. Baker.
This is a case that's a discretionary call, which is obviously the government's decision. This could be easily a state prosecution. So you brought this case in-house, in part, I guess, one, because of a mandate to go after guns. I'm just supposing that's it. But also because you think it might have some linkage. Is that right? Because you're tracing this particular gun to other cases?
No, Your Honor. The case was, again, this is outside the record, but the case was brought in house because it was a serious gun crime in its own right. Mr. Baker was a convicted felon. He had previous arrests for gun offenses, and the decision to prosecute federally was made on that basis.
I'm not questioning either the motive or the intention. I'm just. Have some unease that with regard to the government's decision to say it's not Brady and it's not exculpatory and there's no concern about this knowledge being possessed by defense counsel, I'm assuming, or maybe there is, I don't know. And yet, so you submit it to a judge and you ask us to look at it through the prism of an abuse of discretion. And arguably that's the correct call, but I have some unease that you want to avail yourself of this because you feel there's some risk to future prosecutions, and yet don't want to accept that there might be some theory of the defense that could be made available to the defendant if they had that information. I don't know. There's a duality here that gives me some pause. That's all.
To look at this a slightly different way, Your Honor, if the Maywood murder prosecution had been complete and the Shimon White investigation had been complete, would the government have been required to disclose this information under Brady or Rule 16? The government's answer here would be the same. It would not. The only reason that we engaged in the ex parte procedure here was, again, out of an abundance of caution. And I'm adding to that the additional factor.
Okay. When you say abundance of caution, just break that down for me, Ms. Reuter. What is the caution that you're exercising here?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here prosecuting two different cases. I have material in front of me that has come up in both cases. It is often a practice in our office to provide materials that go beyond the requirements of Rule 16 or beyond constitutional requirements. But I had some pause about doing that in this case because of these other factors that we've addressed. And so, you know, to handle those issues and try and take it out of my own discretion and what to produce or what not to produce, I thought it appropriate in this particular case to have the district judge review the materials herself and weigh in on that.
So it was really the potential of some problem that you were trying to guard against. Although, you know, there could have been a protective order with respect to defense counsel. You're familiar with that procedure where materials are disclosed, they're for defense counsel's eyes. That can be done in criminal cases.
Yes, Your Honor, I am aware of that procedure. That was not something that we sought here.
What is the timeline exactly? At what point in the prosecution of this case was the link discovered? The link of the gun to the other cases?
Right at the beginning, Your Honor. And when the government made disclosure to the defendant was indicted in April 2004. We promptly provided discovery, and our discovery materials included both the information concerning Shimon White and the information about the Maywood murder case. We turned over the paperwork that Shimon White had used to purchase the gun. We turned over the Maywood murder report. We turned over the ballistics reports that linked the gun to the murder. The only material that the defense did not have in this case were the reports of interviews and the fingerprint comparisons that dealt with the couple of transfers that occurred between Shimon White and whoever committed the murder. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Reuter. Ms. Winslow?
Thank you, Your Honor. The government's argument is curious in this case because it goes on with the underlying premise that it needed to maintain confidentiality of these reports having to do with Shimon White and the murder in order to not compromise its investigations. But those reports were disclosed to the defense. Those were reports that we received immediately upon Mr. Baker's prosecution being taken over by the federal authorities. Now, I'll say Mr. Baker was first arrested and taken into the custody of Illinois and charged in Cook County. He remained in Cook County until the date of his trial date in Cook County, at which point he was released to the federal authorities and all this information was disclosed to us. But the government now says that that was the same information it needed to protect. In fact, that had already been disclosed, undermining its argument that there was any basis for the suppression of this of these materials or to provide them to Judge Manning. Judge Manning, unfortunately, in her decision, provided no explanation. She didn't provide us with any basis for her ruling that these materials were not relevant to our defense. As I discussed in my opening argument and as discussed throughout the briefs, we maintained that this information was highly relevant, exculpatory, and material to our defense. For these reasons, we ask that Your Honors...
Now, it is true he was just charged with possession of the weapon, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So is there anything... I mean, can you... How could you hypothesize that something that was in that excluded material... Could have aided you, Ms. Winslow.
Beyond hypothesizing, and I can certainly do that as well, but beyond hypothesizing, we could have shown that this weapon was possessed and transferred amongst a small group of individuals known to one another. It's significant, Your Honor, this gun was being transferred illegally. It was being passed from hand to hand in exchange for money illegally. It's a felony for each of these individuals to be transferring this weapon. Clearly, they're not going to be transferring it to individuals who are unknown to them. We could have shown that Mr. Baker had no connection to this group of individuals. In addition,
how do you establish it's just the testimony that he never met them? I mean, I'm trying to play this out, kind of tease out the argument a little bit to see what possible harm. Potential harm could have come to you by not having this.
I appreciate the opportunity to explain it. Mr. Baker lived his entire life in a 4 or 5 block area of the west side of Chicago. Each of the individuals who was involved with possessing this weapon, as shown by the now disclosed reports, was in the Maywood-Bellwood area, entirely separate from the west side of Chicago, and was involved in the same gang. These individuals had personal ties to one another, which were never established for Mr. Baker. So there is a clear inference that Mr. Baker was on the outside of this circle. He was not somebody who would have been trusted with the felony transfer of this weapon. Moving on to our likely hypothesis, we would have interviewed these individuals. The fact that they had been arrested and interviewed was not a secret to them. By providing us with that information and allowing us to interview them, we wouldn't be giving these people any new data that they didn't already have.
Of course, your argument would be stronger if he was caught in Bellwood with the gun, which is the neighborhood these people are from, but this thing happened on the west side, totally disconnected from Bellwood.
Well, that underlies our argument that it's unlikely that Mr. Baker himself was in possession of this weapon. We would have called... You know, Your Honors may find this speculative, but we would have called his mother, who would have testified based on our interviews with her, that he didn't leave the west side of Chicago, that he didn't have a vehicle, he didn't have ties outside of his immediate community, and that he was not one that would be associating with people in one of the suburban areas of Chicago. We would have presented that testimony.
Well, in addition to his mother, what other witnesses would you have gotten this theory of defense in through?
Well, we certainly would have gotten part of our theory of the defense through the government's witnesses themselves to establish the tight-knit group of individuals possessing this weapon. It's also likely that some of the individuals named or known to those named in these reports may have been available as witnesses for us. Would have subpoenaed them. Pardon me.
What if... this arrest that occurred in the far northwest reaches of the state, I mean, still within the district, so the prosecution would be here. Is that still your argument, just because there's a distance, there's no connect with where the original trafficking occurred, that therefore there couldn't be a possession, that was a plant?
Your Honor, in light of the fact that we were deprived of this, of the benefit of this information, some of our arguments are speculative at this point. In fact, that does underlie our arguments, and we certainly would have gone forward to bolster that and present additional evidence. But in this case, the government suppressed that evidence and deprived us of that opportunity.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement. And the